Welcome to Me Time, the podcast for women in midlife who've been taking care of everyone else and now say, it's my turn to take care of me. I'm Kim Aceto, health and self-care coach for women in midlife and your host. Thank you for spending your precious me time with me right now. Enjoy the show. Okay, so today I am here with Isabu Iqbal. Isabu is a career and life coach who helps ambitious perfectionists discover, appreciate, and apply their strengths so they can experience more joy in their professional and personal lives. Isabu describes herself as an ambitious perfectionist and is committed to taking a positive approach to perfectionism. This, she believes, is a much more kind and realistic approach than wishing one's perfectionism away. Isabu has an extensive background in adult education and is motivated by learning and helping others. She has a PhD in education and has had an extensive and fulfilling career in higher education. In her late 40s, Isabu decided to pursue her deep interest in and curiosity for coaching and shifted her career focus to this field. Isabu is certified with the International Coaching Federation and is a Gallup certified strengths coach. She takes a strengths-based approach to all her work. Isabu, welcome to the Me Time Midlife Podcast.
Thank you, Kim. I'm really happy to be here with you today.
Yes, and I'm so happy that you accepted my invitation to come on the podcast and talk about perfectionism, because it's something I think a lot of us really deal with.
Agreed.
Right. So I'm looking forward to having a conversation about that. But as you're a first-time guest, I'm going to start with the question I ask every first-time guest first, which is, what do you enjoy doing during your me time?
Well, I love the outdoors. I love moving my body. And I mean, my happiest moments are being in nature, hiking, really being in the outdoors. And when I can't get away, then just cycling in the city, going for walks. I live close to the beach and I live close to the forest. So I consider myself very lucky to be able to often walk there. Interestingly, what I also love doing is spending time with my teenagers now. You know, when they were younger, me time was
sparse.
Time.
Right.
Yeah. Now I love being with them as they're older. Yeah.
Oh, that's great. Yeah. And the first thing you said about, you know, nature and just moving your body and all of that, you're not the first person to talk about, you know, walking in nature. I mean, it's just so healing and it's so good for our physical and mental and emotional health, I think, all of it. So, yeah, it's great that you take time to do that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So let's talk about perfectionism, okay? Because that's why I wanted you to come on the podcast. But I'm going to start by just asking you, I read a little bit in your bio about it, but can you just kind of share a little bit more about, like, why did you go into this? Why did you choose this niche of ambitious perfectionists, I guess?
Yeah, you know, I kind of think it chose me. I didn't, it was actually somebody else who pointed out that, oh, it seems like you work with ambitious perfectionists. And I thought, oh my gosh, you are so spot on. This is exactly right. So I wouldn't say that I identified it. The category was higher education professionals. And I definitely put myself in the category of an ambitious perfectionist. So I think that's also, you know, we're drawn towards things that also contribute to our own healing and growth. So that's why it feels like a really good fit for me.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And we've talked about this, but I would say about half of my clients are also ambitious perfectionists. Mm-hmm. A lot of my clients have spent, you know, most of their career focused on achievement and moving forward and all of that. And we know as women in our careers, we often are you know, we have to do that, right? We have to work really hard, and we have to, you know, it's just something we have to do, yeah. You know, and then in academia, in your world as well, I see a lot of that. And so I work with them on their health, but what do you actually work with your clients on, these ambitious perfectionists?
Well, in a classic definition of a perfectionist is someone who holds themselves to impossibly high standards, right? So we're not talking about high standards, which I think often we can agree is a good thing to have high standards. But when we're talking about impossibly high standards, we're meaning standards that are unrealistic, or perhaps even goals that, or standards that can only be achieved through great difficulty and suffering. So when I work with other ambitious perfectionists, it's really often around everything that's tied up with having high standards that tend to be unrealistic.
I really like that definition, because mm-hmm. I get this too with my clients, is, you know, with these types of clients that are very successful, you know, professionally, but they haven't put as much attention on their health and self-care, and that's why they come to me. But you know, that fine line between ambition and being gentle with yourself, right? Like what is that fine line? How can we find that within ourselves? And I like how you used, you know, these two words that really stood out to me, what were unrealistic goals or achievements. And also what was interesting was suffering. Mm-hmm. I've never thought about mm-hmm. it like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because when our standards are impossibly high, we are inevitably falling below our standards most of the time, and that then leads to anxiety, depression, self-criticism, and that is something that's been really well established in the literature, is that link between perfectionism and some of those outcomes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
that's really interesting. I mean, like, give an example of a client of yours, I guess. And while you're thinking about that, I'll give an example of a client that I would have. You know, she wants to apply, you know, her very, very high ambitions, and I would say now I have some words for it, her unrealistic ambitions to her mm-hmm. health goals. So she might have this number that she wants to weigh. Maybe it's the weight that she was when she got married or before she had kids or whatever it is, or at some age. And she wants to get back to that number. And, you know, maybe 30, 40 years later, that number is unrealistic and or may cause quite a bit of suffering, because everything comes at a cost. And, you know, I mean, so is it worth it, is a really big question that I ask clients like this. So, mm-hmm. so yeah. And then when they fall short or they can't do everything completely right, then they get frustrated and discouraged, and, you know, and that's where the negative self-talk and all this downward spiral comes in. That's kind of more on my end. What about you? What would be like an example of a client that you'd work with?
Yeah, that's an excellent example. A lot of the women that I work with are considering some sort of career change, typically not a full-on reinvention, but they are usually well-established in their careers and now thinking about what a change might be. So for example, I'm working with someone who has really deep and experience in project management, and she is currently with a pharmaceutical company and wanting to move into doing project management in higher ed. So same type of work, but in a really different context. And she has established for herself that a good next step would be to have some informational interviews. And she established this months ago, And then there was COVID. And now she is thinking about re-engaging in those conversations. And she's stalling because she's coming up with all these, well, there's all this fear that's tied into that. What if I meet with this person and I get offered a job? What if I have to leave my job? What if I don't like my new field? And so the stories just get amplified and projected. And so what I'm inviting her to do is to bring it to the next step, to really stay curious. What would it be like to have a conversation with somebody else about doing project management in higher ed? Because really, that is what an information interview is about. But there's so much fear that gets caught up in this and in being a perfectionist that then taking the next step becomes extremely difficult. Yeah, so it's kind of bringing it to the next step, something that really it's impossible to quote unquote fail at because it's so small, you can do this.
So what you're saying is perfectionists, they create all of these, well, first of all, maybe they have an unrealistic goal, and then they create all of these stories of things that could happen that it just becomes too overwhelming to take action.
That's often the case. I mean, some of the classic characteristics of being a perfectionist, and here the term when we expect perfectionism of ourselves is a self-oriented perfectionist. I mean, the standards we've talked about, the tendency to be really self-critical, especially when you think or you perceive that you feel perceive that you've made a mistake or that you haven't met your standards. Another one is difficulty tolerating uncertainty. So, if I go to this information interview, I don't know what's going to happen. What if A or B or C? Doubting oneself is another big one, and then being indecisive, right? And so those last three, the uncertainty, difficulty tolerating uncertainty, and the self-doubt and the indecisiveness, like they're really tied up in fear. Yeah.
Yeah, that's interesting because I think, well, at least for me, without thinking too much about it, the first things that come to mind when I think about perfectionists is not fear. It's actually more ambition and more like they want to get it right and all of these, I guess. And so fear is interesting how it's perfectionism is based on fear.
Yes, there's this beautiful quote. There's Stephen Guise who wrote a book called How to Be an Imperfectionist. He's got this quote, and it's, if perfectionism were an iceberg, the small visible tip would be a desire for excellence, and a submerged part would be fear of failure. Right? And so I really like that because often, I don't know if this is actually true, but we think about the iceberg, most of its mass is underwater, and then just that tip. So it looks like high standards, and it is these impossibly high standards, and then what's down below is this is a fear, like fear of being judged by others, fear that we're going to look foolish, fear that we're not going to meet our goal.
I really love that example. And you talked about, I mean, this is what we do as coaches, right? We know how to break down goals into something realistic so that they can actually do it and move forward and take that first baby step. With my clients, they often kind of balk at that idea at first, like, oh, this is nothing. This is not going to do anything. Me drinking a glass of water when I wake up in the morning, like, what good is that going to do? Right. I don't know if you run into that as well.
All the
But here's the thing. It's once they get over that, or I don't know if they get over it, but they do it. And then they see the benefit and they actually know, not just feel like they're moving forward, but they actually are moving forward because, one good, action leads to the next good action and so on. Do you get that as well?
Oh my gosh. Yeah. I mean, if you could see me, you'd see this big smile on my face because you have totally hit such a key piece of this, right? So perfectionists, like, we're not typically happy with small amounts of progress, right? We're wanting big kind of perfect wins. And then, you know, when you combine that with this unrealistic expectations piece, and as we talked about just a few minutes ago, then you're coming up short against your own expectations, and then that's your pointing. So yes, you're absolutely right. And I have experienced, you know, this myself, if I can share a story. A number of years back, so I'm 51 now, and in my 40s, I decided that I wanted to sing. I had, singing really, really moves me, and I would, you know, listen to other people sing, and I want to sing, and I would never, ever, ever sing in a group, and I would never sing at home, and I had joined an anybody can join type choir, right? Mm-hmm. Like, where basically all you need is a pulse, and then you can join.
No auditions.
No auditions at all. And then I had dropped that. And I remember speaking with my coach at that time. I was like, I really want to sing, but I'm so exhausted, and I can't like fit one more thing into my schedule. And, you know, and then it's got to be like the perfect evening and the perfect time, and it has to meet all these requirements. And she said, well, what if you hummed at home? Right. It was like this revelation for me that it didn't have to look like a certain way. I could sing at home. I could hum at home, because I don't think I was comfortable yet even singing. So it just goes back to what you're saying, right? Like the one glass of water or whatever it is, that small step.
Yes. And sometimes I like to point to my clients' successes, whether it's in their career or an educational success or a family or relationship success. And I ask them to talk a little bit about how they became successful in that thing. And it was never one big, huge event. It was always one day at a time, one small action at a time, one class at a time, right? And that's really how we get there.
Yeah, and I like to think of it as one decision at a time, right? Because every choice we make ultimately is based on a decision.
Right. Yeah. Right. So let's talk more about how can we get over this fear, and how can we, you know, take action on these little things so that we don't, you know, sit there and think about everything that could happen and how we're going to respond to everything. And then we just, you know, we experience that paralysis by analysis, you know?
Yes. Yeah.
What do you think? How do we do that?
Well, I, like you have already mentioned, for me, it's this ability to break things down, which is really, really key to being able to take action, right? Because some of your listeners may have read the work of James Clear. I think he uses who writes about habits, and he, I believe, uses, I'm sure others have used this term too, but motivation being slippery, right? So we can't rely on our motivation. Mm. There has to be another approach. And I really agree with that. And so when you're able to break things down to the level where it is impossible to fail with that next action that you have identified. So if we were to really take this kind of in a stepwise approach, would that be helpful? Kind of
that'd be great.
Going, yeah, yeah. Okay. So let's assume that that you or the, you know, whoever it is has made the decision about what it is that they are wanting to do, whether it's the weight, whether it's starting a side business, whether it's retiring, you know, making a career shift, whatever it might be. So I think that the next step is is really about reaffirming or affirming why that bigger goal is important to you. Mm-hmm. You know, like, what does this mean to me? Because sometimes we may have set a goal at a certain time, internalized it, and I think that there's a real value in reaffirming why that goal is important. And here we're talking about coming up with the reasons, both from your head, but from your heart, right? Mm-hmm. Like not from one place only. What I found here too is that, I don't know if this is unique to, I don't know if this is unique to women in midlife, but the ability to set a goal that may feel selfish, but it's not selfish, right? So we sometimes censor ourselves into thinking that that's not a worthy enough goal, or that goal is too focused on me, because we're so accustomed to taking care of others. And so mm-hmm. sometimes it's difficult to maybe even accept our goals. But let's say that we get there, right? To be clear on the goal, affirm why it's important. Then I like to suggest that you write down all the pieces that might be involved in meeting that goal, but really, really taking it to small steps. So for example, with the singing one that I talked about earlier, if I want to sing more, sure, joining a choir is one way to sing more, but so is pulling out my music and leaving it on the kitchen where I'll see it. You know, so is listening to more music. So is finding a song that I might like. And similarly with the person who is looking at a career change, well, having an info interview is one step, definitely. But it could be many other things, such as looking at LinkedIn profiles that of other project managers in higher ed. Pulling out your resume, not even revising it, right? But just finding it. Where is it? So that's what I mean by like really writing down the small steps. And some people are very good at doing this in great detail and far into the future. I'm not one of those people. I tend to be like 3 months is kind of a comfortable future orientation for me. And I'm not sure if you're familiar with the work of BJ Fogg, who's written a lot of habits. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So he has this mapping activity, and I like to do this as a concept map, which is really about you put a topic in the center. Let's say you're doing this on paper. You put a topic at the center. In this case, it would be the goal. And then from there, branch out and attach all the pieces of that goal that would be required if you were to work towards that goal. Mm. And he has a further step, which is really about thinking about those. So once you've done that, brainstorm is to think about what takes high ability, what takes low ability. Mm-hmm. What do you have high motivation for? What do you have low motivation for? Mm-hmm. Right. So to be able to think then of like, what is it that I have high motivation for, but that takes low ability? Mm-hmm. And pick that as your next step. So get really, really granular about your next step. Like make it so small that you have absolutely no reason to talk yourself out of it, right? And make it so non-threatening that you're gonna give it a try,
right?
And so this is all about making success easier than failure. And again, I put failure in quotation marks. Mm-hmm. So those are the steps that I help my coaching clients go through. These are also the steps that I apply for myself.
Yeah. I love how you said how to make success easier than failure, because that's the goal. Yeah. I mean, that's the fear with perfectionists is they're going to fail. Well, if you break down the goal small enough, then failure is nearly impossible.
Exactly.
I love sports. So I like to use examples of sports. So I don't know if any listeners are interested in this, but I talk about something similar with my clients sometimes. And I like to use the example of, you know, in track and field, one of the events is a high jump, right? Mm-hmm. Where you run and then there's a bar that's really, really high up and you have to try to jump over and clear it without touching the bar.
Yeah.
Well, it's really, really hard to do, right? Mm-hmm. So I use an example of lowering that bar low enough to the ground where you don't have to even jump over it. You can step over it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, mm-hmm. So what would that look like in the goal that they're trying to create, right? Trying to meet.
I love that visual. That is terrific.
Yeah. So it's the same thing, right? Is how do we break things down so that we can accomplish it and move forward. Great, Isabu. I love that what you shared in the concept map. You know, having that visual, I think, really works well for a lot of people.
Yeah. And then it's keeping that alive, right? And, mm-hmm. and really trusting the process.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And then that first step, you know, whether it's that stepping over the bar or whatever it is, I mean, it might need to be repeated multiple times before you're ready to take the next step, and that is okay.
Absolutely. And also I want to point back to the very first step you said was to reaffirm what the goal is, not just through logic alone and not just through emotion alone, but mm-hmm. we have to have both. We have to have both working together. It needs to be logical, mm-hmm. right? And it also has to be emotional. We have to, you know, and I love how you said we can't rely on emotion alone. I talk about that a lot. You know, we have to, that's why we have to build in habits, because we can't rely on being inspired all the time. We're never inspired and motivated all the time to do things we don't want to do.
That's right.
But combining those two things, I think that was a really great point that you made as well.
Yeah. And I can't remember if I said this, but linking it to our values, because mm-hmm. I do a lot of values work. And yeah. I think that being able to, sometimes our intellect can't quite figure out why something is so important, and yet we can see how it meets our values.
Mm-hmm. And I'll add in there, since you're a strengths person, linking it to our strengths, right?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Which we don't always, which we're not always at the best position to,
right.
to see. Yes, I agree.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So logic and emotion, linking it to our values mm-hmm. and our strengths will give us the best chance for success in the goal that we want to pursue. And then, you know, breaking it down into bite-sized chunks that we can actually move forward on.
Yeah. I really think that this is something people have trouble, or I've seen that people have trouble with. They think it's bite-sized. And from my perspective, I'm often seeing multiple subcomponents of what has been identified from the other person as something mm-hmm. small.
Mm-hmm. Well, we could talk about other things today, but I asked you to talk about, perfectionism. So thank you for that. And you know, we'll have you back to talk about something else, but you know, before we go, is there anything else that you wanted to share that we maybe didn't get to, around this that you think listeners, might find value in?
I would say that it's been implied in a lot of what we've said is this, this being gentle with ourselves, right? Because none of this is going to be possible, these steps or any of it, unless we show some gentleness towards ourselves. I know some people have a bit of a reaction towards the word, you know, self-compassion. So I will say, know that this is in support of your own growth. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what a lot of us are seeking and working towards.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I know we can have a whole other conversation that I would love to have, but we don't have time. But I would love to talk about, you know, why we as women, why we have this thing with perfectionism and having unrealistic standards and all that kind of stuff for ourselves. And I mean, that just bleeds into everything that we do, right? How we do relationships, career, health.
Yeah.
I mean, all of it. So
parenting.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, Isabu, I'm going to, include your website, in the show notes, as well as your LinkedIn. People can connect with you there as well. Is there anything else you want to point, listeners to?
I have prepared a resource for your listeners, and that is describing some of the steps that we talked about towards the end of this conversation.
Well, thank you so much for providing that.
My really pleasure.
Appreciate that. Yeah. So I'll include that. I'll put that actual link in the show notes as well, so people can go straight there.
Great. Thank you, Kim.
All right, Isabu, thank you again so much for coming on the podcast and talking about this topic that I haven't covered yet. So this is great. Thank you.
Excellent. My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
If you find the Me Time Midlife podcast valuable, there are many ways you can support it. The best way is to simply tell your midlife friends about it. It also helps the show's visibility if you rate and review it on iTunes, Stitcher, or simply directly in your Apple Podcasts app if you listen to the show that way. And if you want more Me Time in your life and continue the conversations we have on the show with other women on a similar journey, consider joining our Me Time Midlife community on Facebook. Simply search for Me Time Midlife Community in your Facebook search bar, or go to metimemidlifepodcast.com to learn more. Thank you again for listening. And until next time, remember, you've been taking care of everyone else. It's your turn to take care of you.